Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. And right now, joined by Eric Bollert of Media Matters, farewell to Colbert Nation. Eric, welcome back.
Hey, how are you?
I appreciate it, man. It's like it's like the end of a dynasty.
It is. Stephen Colbert, you know, is obviously leaving this week. Thursday will be the last show. He replaces David Letterman next May. Sans persona, without his right-wing sort of buffoonery persona that he's perfected on Comedy Central. And, you know, it really is. I mean, it's sort of like Bobby Orr and Barry Sanders. I mean, there aren't many people who go out on top. And Colbert is doing that, which makes it all the more painful for everyone who tuned in for regular bouts of sanity.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the brilliant way he was able to skewer the news and going, you know, starting back in the Bush administration and all the way through the Obama years. So, you know, it's definitely a milestone of sorts, I think.
It is. And, you know, let me ask you this. I mean, you know, we've got hardcore reporters that are out there. You know, I'm a talk show host. We talk about it. I don't profess to be an expert in anything except for running my mouth. You know, and then we've got people like Steve Colbert, who is he's a comedian, but he gets the news out there. He talks about the issues. I think each one of them has a very effective way of getting at least the discussion going, if not the educational process. How do we duplicate that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the good part is this sort of thing has been created, and it was created mostly by Jon Stewart. And it's all of the things you talked about, sort of engaging people in the news in a different and entertaining and funny, but also very, at times, poignant and important way. I mean, anyone who has a teenage son or daughter can tell you that, you know, along with Facebook, where they get their news, particularly their political news, is watching Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert the next day after school.
Right.
So watching it online. So there's absolutely no question that if it weren't for them, there would be a generation that would be sort of even more lacking, I think, in the news. Because trust me, those kids aren't watching CNN. So the good news is this whole other way of communicating and talking about the news and current events, and frankly, from my perspective, puncturing the right-wing hypocrisy, just lampooning and making fun of Fox News and just the you know, the amazing things that they try to pass off for news and commentary. So they're educating a whole generation about how to watch Fox News, how to listen for propaganda, and they've done it in an incredibly funny and insightful way. I mean, this really is the golden age of political satire, and sometimes when you're in the middle of something like that, you don't really appreciate it until it starts to disappear.
Do you think Mr. Colbert is going to continue with political satire, or is he going to branch out?
When he goes to CBS and replaces Letterman, he'll just be, you know, he'll be a straight-up host. You know, he'll be like Jimmy Fallon and he'll be like Conan. He's a very talented guy, very funny guy without being pretending to be like Bill O'Reilly. So, you know, I think he'll do great. I would love to see it if he would bring back Steve Colbert every now and then on The Late Show and even introduce that character to an even wider mainstream audience. So hopefully the on-air Stephen Colbert might be able to live on occasionally on network TV.
There you go. You know, and see, now my only question is, are the pistachio Eagles up for grabs? You know,
right, because, right, exactly.
You know, I've been looking for that 3-pack and I can't find them anywhere. Anything else that we should be thinking about? Because, you know, we're talking about a different way of getting information, and this is important.
Well, what's interesting, and the thing I looked at my column at Media Matters is, you know, as I mentioned, we're sort of in this golden age of political satire with Jon Stewart and with John Oliver at HBO and Stephen Colbert. And it really is amazing how conservatives for decades have just been completely unable to harness the rhetorical weapon of comedy and satire. And their attempts time and again have just completely failed. And you know, I argue that, you know, comedy and satire can't really be rooted in contempt and in sort of unhinged hatred, which is how, you know, so many conservatives view the world, and they certainly view the Obama administration. So it's interesting that as progressives and liberals and as you, and if we've talked about sort of revolutionize the way particularly younger generation deals with the news, Republicans have basically been a bystanders in this entire phenomena. And when you talk about particularly White House elections and the youth vote, we know the problem that exists with the midterms. When you talk about national elections and the youth vote and the extraordinary, overwhelming advantage Democrats have, a lot of that comes from this ability to communicate in a different and entertaining way. And it's a way conservatives just simply have never been able to figure out.
I agree. And it's a great tool. And you're right. A lot of younger folks do get their news directly from those sources. So I'm going to polish up on some jokes and see what I can do. I don't think I'm going to be anywhere near as effective, but that's another story. Eric, how do we find out more about you and what you do for Media Matters?
Yeah, go check us out at MediaMatters.org.
Fantastic. We appreciate it. Eric Ballert, Media Matters. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
The Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio reminds you to register to vote, educate yourself on the issues, be part of the process.
Loan sharks and their lobbyists really know how to put the ick in ethics. Though they've tried to buff up their public image by calling themselves consumer lenders, their game remains the same ethical mess it's always been. They target poor and financially struggling people, entice them to borrow with come-ons touting quick and easy money, then hook them to installment loans with interest rates up to 36%. At such rates, it's hard for these hard-hit people to repay the bank on time, so most are forced to keep borrowing more money just to pay down the previous loans. To make this even ickier, the sharks are especially fond of setting up their loan offices around Army bases so they can prey on America's low-paid, financially stressed soldiers. The good news is that several state legislatures are taking action to provide relief. The bad news is that their relief is not for the borrowers, but the banks. With an army of lobbyists and a multi-million-dollar arsenal of campaign cash, the industry has already induced legislators to lift interest rate caps in 8 states, most of which have a large number of military bases. The cynical claim of the loan sharks, believe it or not, is that they are suffering financial hardships. These poor-mouthing bankers say that to make, quote, an acceptable profit, they must be allowed to charge borrowers more than 36% interest. Acceptable to whom? One of the largest purveyors of these loans, a subsidiary of Wall Street megabank Citigroup, reported a hefty 31% profit increase last year under the old rate structure. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we have here is a brazen purchase of legislative favoritism by some of the richest financial interests in America, allowing them to increase their exploitation of some of America's poorest people. What exactly is acceptable about that? The whole scheme is a shameful hustle.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top! Thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now, one in six Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our coworkers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your participation in this program. Please send us an email at requests@wfrnlive.com. That's requests@wfrnlive.com. Your comments, we'll read them. We'll take them to heart. We may or may not get back to you on it, but we will read them, that's for sure. Right now we're talking with Kate Timorello, who is with Politico. Kate, welcome to Union Edge.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. The White House to tech chin up on immigration. What's going on?
Well, so President Obama announced his immigration executive actions last month, and the tech industry had a polite but tepid response in most cases. You know, Obama's executive actions were largely aimed at undocumented immigrants, and that's not really where tech's bottom line problem is. The industry is more kind of focused on high-skilled immigration. While they push for comprehensive reform, their big concern is making sure they can fill their engineering jobs that they have available. And so it turns out the White House has been, since November, reaching out to the tech industry saying, hey, you know, we did all we could. We'd like your support on this. Please don't be too disappointed in us. We really need Congress now. So we're just kind of looking at the back and forth there.
You know, we hear it from various different arenas across the United States. Oh, if somebody comes to the United States and gets their undergraduate degree in STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, yeah, we should just staple a green card to the back of it and let them stay here and work. And that's all fine and dandy. I'm a strong advocate for immigration to the United States. It's it's where we all came from. We came from someplace else. But my point is the high-tech industries are complaining that they can't get enough engineers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we got a lot of young men and women here in the United States right now, and we've got some really great universities. The only barring factor between them, the students, and a really great degree in sciences and technology is the mortgage that they pick up when they get their school loans. So maybe what the United States ought to be doing is seeing what they can do to reduce the cost of school loans, not have Mitt Romney say, well, borrow the money off of your parents. That tells me how in touch with reality he is. And make it affordable for kids to go to school here in the United States. I think that would solve the tech industry's problems within about 4 years.
Yeah, the tech industry is, you know, definitely concerned about making sure students in the U.S. can get the STEM education that a lot of them, you know, want, and the tech industry certainly wants. People like Mark Zuckerberg have said, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, have said that, you know, even with U.S. students focusing on STEM studies, there's still going to be a need for high-skilled immigrants. And their point has kind of always just been, you know, we'll hire anyone. Anyone who comes to us who knows what they're doing and wants to work, we will hire them regardless of where they come from if you let us. So I think, you know, the tech industry has a bunch of different issues in front of them when it comes to making sure they can get the high-skilled labor they need.
I agree. I agree that they're concerned about that. I think perhaps, I don't know, is it they're not willing to make the investment in people? Or, you know, it used to be in this country, now I'm an older person, but it used to be in this country, if you graduated with a degree that was in demand, oftentimes with that first hiring, you could negotiate with the company to pay your tuition loans. They weren't as high as they are now, but maybe Mark Zuckerberg ought to be putting his money where his mouth is.
It seems like Zuckerberg has, been very vocal about the fact that he just can't find people, let alone, be able to, you know, make it easier for those people. I think he and people like him certainly make the point that it's just a gap in the U.S. education system, that there isn't kind of the surplus of highly skilled, especially in the STEM field, students. So they're looking abroad.
Very interesting indeed. Any other upshot? Just how upset is the high-tech industry with the administration, and what are they thinking about doing?
So I think now we're all waiting for Congress to move. You know, Obama couldn't raise the cap on high-skilled visas unilaterally. There had been some hope that he would work around the edges a little more than he did, but, you know, if the tech industry wants just a higher number of high-skilled immigrants to be allowed to stay in the country, they really need Congress to step in and do that for them.
Is there any talk either with the high-tech industry or industries or with Congress or even the administration in trying to make it easier for folks here in the United States to get those degrees that people like Mark Zuckerberg are looking for?
Yeah, STEM education has definitely been a focus, you know, kind of across everyone. I think people are definitely interested in making sure that U.S. students have the same opportunities. But until then, you know, if we get first graders interested in STEM now, that's a, you know, 15-year payoff, whereas if I think Facebook wants to hire engineers tomorrow kind of thing.
Very interesting indeed. It's a shame that our education system's been undercut so much over the last 20 years or so. Anything else we should take away from this article today?
Just that the immigration reform debate will surely continue, especially into the Republican Congress next year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're right. How do we find out more about you and what you do for Politico?
So our stories are up on Politico.com, depending on kind of whether or not they go over the paywall. But our information is all there, and I am on Twitter at Kay Tamarello.
Fantastic. We appreciate it. And if you include us at The Union Edge, we'll retweet it for you, okay?
All right, great.
Thank you very much. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm John Kerr. On NBC's Meet the Press, former Vice President Dick Cheney dodged pointed questions from host Chuck Todd by pushing debunked myths about the CIA's use of torture on terrorist suspects during the Bush administration. For example, when Todd asked Cheney for his own definition of torture and whether the CIA's techniques amounted to torture in Cheney's opinion, Cheney referenced a 2002 DOJ memo to suggest CIA techniques were sanctioned by the DOJ.
All of the techniques that were authorized by the president were, in effect, blessed by the Justice Department opinion that we could go forward to those without, in fact, committing torture.
But the truth is that the memo Cheney cited in his interview never identified explicit boundaries on torture and was actually rescinded in 2004. Cheney also incorrectly implied that the CIA techniques helped find bin Laden.
So we did capture bin Laden. We did capture an awful lot of the senior guys of al-Qaeda who were responsible for that attack on 9/11. I'd do it again in a minute.
But the Senate report concluded that the most critical information that led to bin Laden was gathered without the use of brutal CIA techniques. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Auto Workers are heading into a very challenging and very promising 2015. UAW President Dennis Williams says the union will build on progress in organizing efforts at VW in Tennessee and Mercedes in Alabama. The UAW also faces labor contract negotiations at the Detroit 3 automakers, at Mitsubishi, John Deere, and for Michigan State employees. At the Detroit 3, Williams says his members are looking for rewards at those profitable companies in exchange for sacrifices the auto workers made in the bankruptcies at GM and Chrysler.
In 2008, 2009, we had a disaster. Everybody made sacrifices. Our members made huge sacrifices. There comes a time that both the company needs to realize that there's reward, and I think it's time for our membership to have a reward.
Williams says with a two-tier wage structure and increasing use of temporary workers in the auto industry and in manufacturing in general, low-wage workers are being used to make high-value products. While he won't tip his hand in advance of bargaining, Williams says when he talks about keeping the auto companies competitive, he's not talking about keeping wages low.
When you're becoming competitive, it's about productivity, innovation, quality, and design, not about who can have the lowest wage.
Williams says the UAW is solidly behind the fast food and retail workers' Fight for 15 movement.
I'm willing and very able to pay a quarter more for a damn hamburger to give $15 an hour a chance. So I'm very supportive. I think it does bring a new movement to this country. It's an emerging movement, and I'm very pleased to see the young people in this country come alive, come in a system in every way I can to empower their voice.
James Thindwa of In These Times says the Fight for 15 movement and the Black Lives Matter national protests against police killings of black men are linked. In a video produced by Chicago's Labor Beat, Thindwa says that police violence in poor, often predominantly African-American neighborhoods is largely a consequence of unsustainable economic exploitation.
Anytime you're exploiting people, people are going to rebel, they're going to revolt, they're going to resist. And to maintain that status quo, you need enforcement. What the cops, what the police are in fact doing in these neighborhoods is enforcing an economic system that is based on exploitation.
Labor Beat's video, The Wage Slave and the Jackboot, can be seen in its entirety on YouTube.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.